You are listening to the Magic of Kanab podcast, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Magic of Kanab. I'm your host, Hal. Today, we're talking about the great hikes in the area, all the many, dozens upon dozens, probably more than that, hikes that are so scenic and so fun here in Kanab or close to. And with me today, I have two people. In our first segment here, we're going to be talking to Kim Blake. She's a member of a local hiking group. Kim, tell us a little bit about yourself, first of all. Ties to the community, how long have you been here? Just a little background.
Well, let's see. My great-great-grandpa, Alan Frost, was one of the first settlers of Kanab. And my other great-grandpa, Edwin Ford, made all the adobe brick here in Kanab of all the pioneer homes. So the red dirt runs deep with me. Yeah. I've lived here most of my life with a few jaunts off to college or a few places, but I've lived here most of my life. My husband is from St. George. We have six kids, aged 31 to 19. Three are married, and all of them have moved back, so we're happy to have them all back in Kanab now.
Wow.
We're expecting our first grandchild in March, so I'm excited to be a grandma.
Yeah.
Our family's really active. We all hike, ride ATVs. We're all into golfing and camping. We spend a lot of time in the outdoors. We love to travel. Our favorite places are probably Alaska and Puerto Rico, but we just recently went to India.
Wow.
Yeah, that was an awesome trip.
My goodness, yeah.
Went to a traditional Indian wedding there.
On that front, I've got to ask you, what was the food like in India, the real Indian food?
Real Indian food is amazing. It's really good, but that's all they have in India, pretty much. They have Indian food and a little Chinese food, but it's all super hot.
So you can't get a burger on the corner?
We went to Burger King there, and they did have a mutton whopper. So that's yummy.
A mutton whopper.
Mutton whopper. I did not order that. But everything you order there is spiced with, is all Indian spiced. Yeah. So the margarita pizza we ordered at our hotel was spiced like Indian food.
Holy cow. So do you do well with curry?
No problem. I love curry. Yep.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, I love it. It was really good.
Yeah.
But we were really happy to get home and have some American food.
I can imagine. Yeah.
I work at the Kane County School District office. I'm an administrative assistant there. And I love hiking. It all started with a group of ladies that wanted to hike the rim to rim. And so we started training a few years ago, started with a group of seven. And now there's a whole bunch. Some of them I've only hiked with a few times. Mm-hmm. Because we just kind of send out a message that we're going on this hike this weekend, and whoever shows up. So
when was that started? When did you form that group?
We started in probably the spring of 2019, and we were going to hike rim to rim that fall. So we had it all planned, and it snowed that weekend, so we got snowed out. We weren't able to hike that fall, and we were all just heartbroken. So then we were going to hike in the spring when it opened in May, and then COVID shut down the park. So we weren't able to hike that May. So we just kept training, kept hiking. And then we went next October 30th, actually.
So it'd be October 30th, 2020, probably, right?
Yep.
Wow. So for our listeners that don't know, and you probably mostly do, or most of you do, that is the rim to rim, north rim to south rim, or vice versa.
North rim to south rim. We went.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So when you were finally able to do it, and did you say October or November?
October 30th.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So down in the bottom of the Grand Canyon, it's quite warm, right? How was the weather down there?
The day that we went, that first time was perfect.
Yeah.
It was perfect. It was about 30 degrees at both rims, and then it got up to probably the high 80s in the bottom.
Wow.
But we started so early that it was shaded still by the time we got to the bottom. So it was beautiful.
So you had to shed quite a few layers and put a few layers quite back on.
Yep.
So how long of a hike was that?
It's about 24 miles, and it took us about 14 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And several of them have been many times in between. Our next one will be, we were going to go November 4th, but then it snowed, so we canceled. So we'll probably go again in the spring. So
nice.
Several of in my group have gone many times in between.
Yeah.
And we just continue to train, and we've been on every trail around here.
Well, you mentioned your training. And so 14 hours to go, did you say 24 miles?
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel the next day, the day after?
My calves hurt and my shoulders hurt from my hiking poles. And I was just tired, but the sense of accomplishment was just amazing. Yeah. It was such a great experience. It is, the Grand Canyon is just like nowhere else. It's a beautiful place.
Well, I've heard so many people say that, and it's paradisiacal almost, and just such an amazing feast for the eyes and just an incredible experience. So how many women went on that first trip with you?
Well, there were 7 in my group, and then there were about 4 more from another group that joined us. And many times what they'll do is they'll start 2 groups at either end, and then they just swap keys in the bottom so they have cars to drive. But this, the first time that we went, my husband actually drove a 15-passenger van down to pick us up at the South Rim.
So
we were able to just kind of sleep and relax on the way home.
What a hero.
I know. He's a man.
Okay, so tell me how that's evolved. You started out with that small all-women's group, and you said 7. You teamed up with another group of 4. So, well, first of all, do you have a name for the group, the hiking group you're with?
We really don't. We should probably come up with something really catchy, but we're just the Kanab Hiking Group. Thread that we
have. Is it mainly women still, or is it men and women?
Yeah. Sometimes our husbands or our kids or friends or our dogs will go with us. I mean, we just kind of, whoever wants to go. We're not an exclusive club. It's just whoever wants to go. So right now there, I don't know how many, maybe 25 or 30 that we just kind of have a pool of a bunch of people that want to go. And and we'll just kind of text whoever and say, hey, we're going on a hike this weekend. Whoever wants to go.
Wow. How nice.
Yeah.
And so most of them are probably local, I'm assuming, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There are some from other places that will come down. We have some friends from Highland, Utah, actually, that we go up there to hike, and they'll come down here and hike. So. Yeah.
Well, so setting the Grand Canyon aside for just a second, you mentioned you were training for that trip, and not just specific to training, but maybe give me your top 2 or 3 local hikes that you just want to go back to that you really love or enjoy.
Okay. Well, Squaw Trail is probably the most popular. It's just easy. So you can run up there after work. And so when I go up there, I'll just kind of text whoever and say, hey, I'm going to go. Anybody want to go? Sometimes there's only 1 or 2. Sometimes there's 10. And we'll just go up Squaw and back just as fast as we can. And it's beautiful. Every time I go, I comment on how it's my favorite because it's just beautiful. And there's a lot of variety and it's just, and it's easy to get to.
Yeah. The trailhead is right on the edge of town, right?
Yeah. It's easy to get to.
Yeah.
So one is nice because it's just close.
And I'm just curious, do you ever time yourself trying to improve the time, or is it just about the experience? Is it about, I'm getting in shape, I'm training for this next event, so I got to do it faster?
It depends on who I'm with. Most of the time we just go for enjoyment and we don't really pay attention to the time. But a lot of times I'll go with my son-in-law and we just try to beat our last time.
Gotcha.
It's usually when I'm with him, we'll go under an hour. We just try to hustle.
Nice. So Squaw Peak, and then what else do you have there?
So Mansard. I really enjoy Mansard. The petroglyphs are really cool to see. So that one's a fun one. Bunting Trail is a fun one. That one, the elevation, it's a good elevation training hike. So if you're working on elevation, that's a good one. The Cliffs Trail is really fun. It's also an elevation hike, but it also leads to the connector hikes above. So if you go up cliffs, you can catch all those connectors and go all over the place. You can come down Squaw, you can go over to Mansard, you can go all over up there.
Wow. So your favorite, like let's say it's your birthday and you really want to do something you enjoy just for you. What's that hike?
Probably, if I could get a wave permit. I love the wave, if that's not going to happen, I love Buckskin Gulch. Yeah. I love that one. Is beautiful. The longest and deepest slot canyon in the world. And it's not really challenging. It's mostly flat, but it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
I love that one.
Well, what have I heard? I've heard 2 different numbers, actually, 21 miles long or 23 miles long.
I've heard 23. Yeah. I've never gone all the way through. We usually just go up as far as we feel like going and then turn around and come back.
Gotcha. And then some people, I guess, will make a 2-day out of that. They'll hike halfway, sleep overnight, and then do the rest of it the following day.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you'd have to have can you have a vehicle at the other end?
You have to have somebody pick you up.
Yeah.
Right.
Gotcha.
I also love Observation Point. That one, I'll do usually 5 times in the summer. I really love Observation Point. It's really an easy hike, about an 8-mile round trip. And the payoff at the end is just spectacular. Looking down at Angel's Landing. It's really a beautiful hike.
Yeah. When you're looking down to there, it would have to be amazing.
Yeah. It is beautiful.
So of the ones you've mentioned, I think, what's the furthest drive from Kanab to get to where your trailhead is or your starting point?
Of the ones I've mentioned?
Yeah. Fairly close.
They're all fairly close. Buckskin Gulch is probably the farthest, and that's maybe a little over an hour, by the time you go down
the dirt road
right. There. But they're all very close.
Yeah. Well, so I can tell you must be passionate about this. You do it all the time, or frequently,
I
should say. Have your kids caught that bug? Do they like to hike a lot?
Yeah, some of them like to more than others. We actually have a son that's on search and rescue, and he spends a lot of time out in the hills rappelling and canyoneering. So he's very familiar with all the canyons there, all the canyons in Zion, mm-hmm. everything around here. He's done everything. So he's really passionate about it. He loves it.
That's great. And your husband?
Yeah,
right there
he
with
loves
you?
It. He'll give up a few golf days to go hiking with me even.
Good for him.
Yep, he's good.
Do you give up a few hike days to go golf?
I do.
Do you?
Yep.
All right, I like it.
Not as many as he gives up for me, but.
Gotcha. Well, Kim, this has been wonderful. I appreciate it. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we go?
Let's see. If you're planning on going hiking, take plenty of water. Tell people where you're going. Don't hike alone. Be aware of your surroundings. You know, there's snakes, which is why I like winter hiking the most, because you're less likely to run into snakes. But I do like running into snakes. I think they're really cool. I just like them on my terms.
Yes.
Be aware of animals around you. We ran into a lion kill one time, and that was a little bit sketchy, a little scary. So be
really?
Aware.
So the lion wasn't right there at the moment, but
no.
It had been very recently.
Yes, yeah, very right. recently.
Yeah.
And so just be aware, take lots of pictures and respect the petroglyphs and the ruins that you find. But it's such a beautiful place to go hiking. It clears my mind and provides a lot of mental health.
Yeah, right.
For me.
Right.
I love it.
I've talked to a lot of people who say the very same thing. There's nothing better to refresh, clear your head.
Right.
Get out of your own head sometimes than to get out in Mother Nature, and you come back replenished, refreshed, and very grateful that you went. And thank you for that reminder on safety and awareness. That is really good. I know having a brother who's a sheriff's deputy here locally in the county, they unfortunately get a number of calls during the warm months where people are distressed, haven't packed enough water, are not properly prepared, and haven't let people know. So those are all great advice. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, thank you, Kim, so much for coming in. I appreciate it. And now we're going to actually be talking with Rod Willis. Rod is a local here for many, many years, and he is the commander of the search and rescue organization here locally, also a sheriff's deputy. So, Rod, without me introducing you, I'll let you introduce yourself. Just tell me a little bit about your background, ties to the community, how long you've been here, and so forth.
Well, Hal, I appreciate you having me here today. So I'm Rod Willis, search and rescue commander with the Kane County Sheriff's Office. I've worked there for about 20 years. So currently I'm over our search and rescue. I've done a number of different positions as a patrol deputy, detective in our task force.
Wow.
And so
wow.
have had a number of different experiences
yeah.
in law enforcement. So
now were you born and raised here, Rod?
Yes. So right. I was born and raised in Kanab and then moved away, went to school at SUU, Southern Utah University.
Yeah.
Knew I always wanted to come back to Kanab, and when the opportunity presented itself, I came back and
wow.
applied with the sheriff's office, and here I am.
Did you was law enforcement a goal of yours? I mean, did you see that and desire to go that direction?
It was always kind of there, and once I was at school, it piqued my interest some more. I started taking some criminal justice classes there, and just wanted to go after it. After
wow.
I took a few classes.
Were you able to get onto the force quite quickly after applying? Did it take a little bit of time?
I initially tested to go on patrol, but I didn't get it during the same time they had an opening in the jail.
Mm-hmm.
And so they offered that position to me. And so I snatched that up.
Nice.
And then just kind of went from there.
You went from there on your illustrious career. You mentioned detective, task force, now commander of search and rescue. Probably hard to pick and choose, but if you had to pick a favorite, what do you think?
This by far, search
really?
And rescue, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Above and beyond.
Well, tell me a little bit about that specifically, search and rescue. Just how big is the group? How long has it been formed? Just tell us a little bit about the search and rescue unit.
So initially with search and rescue, it's just part of the sheriff's office.
Mm-hmm.
As the sheriff oversees the search and rescue within the sheriff's office. So it's been there from the get-go. As far as like the organization, it's completely volunteer based. We have approximately 75 active volunteers, some more than others.
Yeah,
but they put in a lot of their own time as far as in training every month on their own, on top of meetings, and then our call out operations that we respond to when we go out and
have a distress call and.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, so the 75, first of all, to me, that's an impressive number. But I would imagine they have various skill sets, right, that you're called upon to use if it's a canyoneering incident.
Right.
If it's a fast water incident, is that right?
Correct. So we've got a technical rope rescue team, and then we have a swift water rescue team, a tracking team, and then a search dog team. And some of those volunteers are members of some of those teams or just one of those teams.
Yeah.
But they're all very, they have an expertise in each one of those different teams. And so they take a lot of pride in their training.
That's great.
They're awesome.
So some are cross-trained and a few are more specialized.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. I guess what's the number one category that you guys get called out on? Is there a number one category?
Number one category, I would say a lost hiker. Lost hiker calls all year round. It's not just, summertime, warm times of the year. It's all year round.
Gotcha.
Hikers.
And that's where your tracking unit comes in play. And as well as did you say dog tracking?
Yeah, we have our search dogs.
Search dogs, yes.
And so we utilize them quite a bit, as much as we can.
Right.
But also with our lost hikers calls, usually they call in on their cell phone.
Yeah.
And when they call 911, they have a geo base of where they're at. So we have a generalized GPS coordinates of their location if they stay where they're at.
Mm.
And sometimes they don't stay.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it's a third party call, which they have a general idea of where they're at, but they don't really know.
Yeah, they passed somebody. They don't quite know where they're at. They're saying, I ran into somebody that's in distress back a mile or two, and they try to kind of piece together where they're at, right?
Right.
Okay. Right. So I guess you can geo-track their phone at least and get in the vicinity.
Correct. Okay. And some of the hikes around here, you don't have cell service until you get back to the trailhead.
Yeah.
And so they can give us a landmark of where they saw this person or, something like that where we can go off of. And
Gotcha. Now, Kim Blake is off microphone right now, but she's still with us here today, so she can't defend herself. Rod, between you and I only, because our listeners are going to plug their ears for a minute. How many times have you had to go after her group, help them out, give them a little assistance?
Amazingly enough, never.
Never?
They've
really
got their stuff together, apparently. So
yeah.
They know what they're doing.
I wonder if that answer is prompted by the glare she's looking at you to me with.
Probably.
Sorry, Kim.
I thought that would be the right answer, or I wouldn't have asked. Okay, so now there's a helicopter that you guys have access to or can use sometimes.
Correct.
Is that locally based? Is it right here at the local airport, or where's it kept?
It's not. Okay. But we do. There's a couple of medical helicopters that we use. One is in Page, Arizona, Classic Medical, Air Medical.
Yeah.
They help out quite a bit. And then also Life Flight down in St. George. And then just recently, Utah Department of Public Safety, they've put a helicopter in St. George, whereas before they were in Salt Lake City, and the response time was 3 hours. And now it's within 45 minutes, and they help out tremendously on a lot of our rescues and recoveries.
Yeah, 3 hours could be an eternity sometimes, right?
Depending
on the situation. So what situations call for a helicopter? When is that the best means to accomplish search and rescue?
So a lot of our rope rescue situations require a helicopter at times where our rope rescue team could go in, but it would probably take hours and hours. And so if that helicopter is available, we'll have them come in and do a short haul with their hoist system. And they can be done, save us hours from trying to get this individual out of a slot canyon or, something like that. Because they have this hoist system that's amazing. So
that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So lost hikers, number one, and the helicopters, of course, but what are some of the other things you encounter that are, I guess, fairly common? besides the hikers being missing?
So we have situations where there's hikers that will fall, canyoneering incidents where people fall, and a lot of those are rescues with our technical ropes team. Unfortunately, sometimes they're recoveries, and those are always really difficult, especially on our volunteers.
Sure.
But they have a mission, and they know that they're not only helping that person, but the family. And so it works out that way. Also, we have a lot of medical-related calls out on the hikes where heat-related issues, or people don't take enough water. They're not used to the extreme heat.
Right.
And so twisted ankles, you know, stuff like that, we go out and also help with.
Wow. That's incredible. And I guess from what I hear, tell me if I'm wrong on this, Rod, it's not a dormant unit. I mean, you guys are pressed into service or requested into service fairly regularly, especially during the active months. It's not uncommon. Am I right?
Right. And so most of our volunteer members have a daytime job. And so when there is a call out, their employer is really good about working with them to leave work and go out on a search and rescue operation.
That's so good. And, you know, that's part of being a small community where so many people know everybody and they're willing to drop what they can on a dime, if at all possible, to go out and help. So I was going to ask you, Rod, in your experience or your memory, what's some of the most gratifying, maybe one or two of the most gratifying rescues you've been on that ended well and you just thought, oh, I'm so glad that went the way it did?
A lot of them are gratifying because we do locate the individual. I would say this last summer we had an incident where a 75-year-old woman was with a tour group, and they went down through Middle Route, which is, I guess, the halfway point of Buckskin Gulch. Mm. And she was in a group of her and her friends. They got down into the Buckskin Gulch, and she stayed behind to have lunch or something. And the rest of the group went down to go look at some petroglyphs. And in the during that time, it was around an hour span where when the tour group came back, she was gone.
Yeah.
So they assumed that she had hiked back out and went back to the vehicle. So they hiked out, tried to find her. And was unable to locate her. So the tour guide went back down into the canyon and searched for her down there.
Mm-hmm.
Still wasn't able to locate her. And so he called 911, got us involved. It turned out to be an all-night search.
Wow.
We had a great response from our volunteers. I would say probably 20 to 30 volunteers showed up and searched throughout the evening. We had a DPS helicopter there. So it turned out that she got bored, basically, and started to hike up the canyon upstream towards Wire Pass. And in the process, came across some other hikers. And they said, well, you can go with us if you want. We're going to Wire Pass. She didn't know where that was.
Oh, goodness.
And so she went with them.
Yeah.
And all this with bad knees, too.
Oh, my goodness.
When it all turned out. But she was able to push herself all the way there. Our search and rescue teams eventually located her around the confluence of Buckskin Gulch and Wire Pass and then helped her back from there. But the drive that this lady had to get out of there was pretty amazing. But that was a satisfying situation because at 6-7 hours into it, you're thinking, this is not going to turn out well.
Yeah.
You know,
that's such a long time.
Yeah.
So I guess that brings me to my next question, which is if a person has an active cell phone and they say they are in coverage, because I know coverage is spotty as you're out in the, you know, in the wilds here. Can you ping that if they're not actively on the line, or how does that work?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah. Pinging the cell phone is a tool that we use.
Yeah.
It's not very reliable for our area because there's so many deep canyons and vastness involved. So we can ping a cell phone and it'll usually give us a general area of where that phone is, but it won't give us the direct location.
Gotcha.
If it's a completely flat area, then yeah, we can probably find it. But in a situation like that and being down in the canyon like that, you're not going to be able to get cell service.
Gotcha. Okay, so is it fair to say if you have any cell coverage, even one bar, it might work, but if you're in an area where you just have no coverage, that pinging technology would not work?
Usually it wouldn't. And with one bar, you might be able to get a text out. Mm-hmm. And so that's an option to go that route. A lot of people now, a lot of hikers have Garmin's spot locators, mm-hmm. in-reach devices that they use in case they're down into a slot canyon and
right.
need help.
Right. And on that front, so what's your advice if, you know, if a person obviously can't rely on Google Maps or Apple Maps if they're out on these twisty, windy roads or if they're in canyons? So what's your best advice to help them not get lost?
Plan ahead.
Okay.
Prepare and plan ahead. Also, anymore, there's a lot of map apps on these smartphones, and you can get on there and make your own map prior to going out and hiking an area. And then with these maps that you can make, you don't need cell service and it'll show you exactly where you're at on that map, which is pretty cool. And so a lot of people use that.
Gotcha. So what's one or two of those map apps that come to mind that you're familiar with? That we're promoting any of them. But just,
right. There's a few of them. There's a few that I use personally. Mm-hmm. One's called Avenza Maps. Okay. And that's a really great app where it's completely offline use and it'll show you where you're at. And the maps are already pre-made.
Right.
You can get a lot of Bureau of Land Management maps that way.
Gotcha.
And then another map app is Onyx, O-N-X.
Yeah.
And that's a map app a lot of hunters use.
Right.
And so that's a great one. And then also one that's called Gaia.
Yes.
G-A-I-A. And it's similar to Onyx where you can pre-make your own map.
Gotcha. So even if you don't have coverage, that map is downloaded to your phone. You can see where you're at on there and then can orient yourself and follow that map that's been downloaded.
Correct.
Gotcha.
But don't always rely completely on your cell phone.
Right. Pre-plan it, know what you're doing.
Yeah.
What other advice? I mean, you've mentioned that unfortunately, on occasion, you have some fatalities and probably some serious injuries as well, I'm sure. How can our listeners avoid that? What's the number one, two, three things they can do to stay out of harm's way to the degree possible?
Well, like Kim said, be aware of your surroundings and have a plan, know what you're doing. Take plenty of water, more water than you think you'll need. That's what a lot of folks run into is they run out of water. And sometimes we've had an incident where a gentleman was by himself, didn't bring enough water. He was a photographer and he left all of his camera equipment, kind of hid it to go find water. And he found water, but it was kind of one of those pools from rain that was pretty nasty.
Yeah.
He got turned around in the process from heat related issues, which it just turned from bad to worse.
Oh.
And then he got completely turned around. Eventually, we found him 5 days later.
My goodness.
He was still alive, barely, but he was in really bad shape. And it was all about just not being prepared.
Yeah.
Just didn't have enough water.
So he was able to pull through. But my goodness, what an ordeal to go through.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thank you for that advice. I appreciate it. And goodness, Rod, I'll ask you the same question I asked Kim. What are we leaving unsaid? Is there anything else you'd like to let our listeners know about or be aware of that we haven't talked about?
I would say, you know your limitations.
Yeah.
As a hiker, you know, we have a lot of hikers that come to this area and they get a permit to the wave. Mm-hmm. They win the lottery and it's the only hike that they've done all year. And they've got to go get that Instagram picture. And and so they're not prepared. And then they get out there and heat related issues. And then that's when you get in trouble. We had an incident out at Spooky Gulch, mm-hmm. just off Hole in the Rock Road area, where a gentleman and his friends hike Spooky Gulch. And he got down to a point where he literally got stuck in the slot canyon because he was a bigger gentleman and he had no business being there. And
was he by himself?
So he had a couple of friends with him, but they couldn't get him out either.
Wow.
And so they called for help, called 911. Our response time to that area is 3 hours. It takes us a little while to get there. So we got there, we got set up our ropes team because we were going to have to hoist him out of the top of the canyon And after a while, he got pretty mouthy with our rescuers.
Why do you suppose that was? Was he just that way, or was it a high-stress environment?
I think so. Yeah. High-stress environment. Yeah. And, I mean, he'd been there for hours at that point. So he was frustrated. And, you know, they said, you know, we're trying to do this as fast as we can. And he said, well, you guys are on the clock anyways. And he said, actually, we're not. You know, we're volunteers here. Right. We're here to help you.
We're away from our jobs, away from our self-employment, away from what we do.
Exactly.
To help you. And my goodness.
So that humbled him, you know, quite well, you know, when he got him out of there. But that situation turned out to be a good thing because we were able to work with the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management. And I don't know if you're familiar, when you go to Disneyland, there's some of these rides where it says, yeah, you can only be this tall to go through this ride. Well, we made it so we have these steel posts at the trailhead, and there's a sign that says, if you can't fit through these posts, do not attempt this trail.
Interesting.
So it's similar to how wide that canyon is.
Yeah.
So it's actually, hopefully that's deterred some people.
I hope. And, you know, it's kind of funny that people would say, well, that's discriminatory. No, it's life-saving in this instance.
Exactly.
So, okay. Well, Rod, thank you so much for coming in. Really appreciate it. You and Kim earlier. And sorry for the little joke at Kim's expense there a few minutes ago, but it was fun. So I want to thank our listeners for tuning in today to The Magic of Kanab. And if you're enjoying this, please remember to like and subscribe. And we look forward to seeing you in our next episode. Thank you so much. This has been another episode of The Magic of Kanab podcast, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network, hosted by Hal Johnson and produced by Relic.